Today is actually what they classify as Vision Sunday, and somehow I still managed to get up here to preach, so they let me in. It's kind of a miracle, really, but here I am. And I got this great text, which is Revelation chapter 13. So if you do have a Bible, get yourself prepared for that, and Mitch, you too, because I had this thing where I put insert Bible text here and then never actually inserted a Bible text, so I'm going to need Mitch to read that for me. But what I want to do is I want to paint you a picture today, because we got to figure out a way to get the apocalyptic vision of John, of beasts, and we have to figure out a way to bring that down into our real lives. And so I want to explain to you a little bit about apocalyptic writing, what it's meant to do. And from what I understand, apocalyptic writing, it takes the ordinary events, okay? So just the ordinary events of reality and shows them in light, in the light of eternity, okay? It paints the events of every day with the colors of eternity, okay? So artists among us, just imagine with me, okay? And if you're a mathematician, just bear with me here. Okay, so it paints the ordinary events of reality in the colors of the sun, the moon and stars, the past, the present and future, heaven and hell, and monsters and men. Apocalyptic shows that what we think are ordinary moments in our lives are anything but ordinary when seen in the light of eternity. Okay, and I want to give what to me is a recent example of this. And we'll see, the first service, nobody resonated with me on this. So please, please, somebody knows some stuff about pop culture, okay? But what I want to ask you about is have you seen the movie? How many people, you got to put up your hands for this, okay? How many people have seen the movie X-Men Days of Future Past? Put it up high, Jason. Be proud. There you go. Okay, that's what I'm talking about here. Okay, so if you've seen this movie, then you know just how amazing it was. And what I want to explain to you is that I think that this is an excellent modern-day equivalent of the ancient art of apocalyptic writing. Okay? Here's just my take on the movie. Okay, I like to think of myself as a pretty great movie critic. Okay, but what this movie does is it takes one moment in life, okay, the moment of a particular, the life of a particular person, and it shows this particular person where they choose to kill rather than to forgive, okay? And it shows that moment in the light of the future, okay? But what happens is, the truth is, that because of that moment of unforgiveness, there is no future. There's just death. Okay? One ordinary moment unveiled. Remember, the word apocalypse means unveiling. Okay? That's what it meant in the first century. So what it means is, like, you pull back a curtain. This is something that they use it for. The pulling back of a curtain to reveal what's behind. Okay? Or the opening of a cover to see what's inside. Okay, that's what the word apocalypse, this is what it means, okay? The opening of things. Now, what it doesn't mean is some horrible, horrible event. Okay, that's essentially what we've given the term apocalypse now, is just some gigantic tragedy. Okay, that is not at all what it means. It simply means the unveiling. Okay? So here we have the unveiling of one ordinary moment of unforgiveness unveiled in the light of eternity. And what we see from this movie is that without forgiveness, there is no future. There's only death. And I remember coming out of that movie, and I literally had tears in my eyes. See, Andrew went with me. He can testify to this. And I was absolutely distraught over the power of unforgiveness. And I remember just thinking, what's at stake in these moments where we choose to forgive or to not forgive? And this movie, it painted it so well in the colors of eternity, of monsters and men and life and death and destruction and redemption. And I thought, yeah, forgiveness can change the world. It can change our worlds, or it can destroy them. And I knew this was true. You see, because apocalypse, the point of apocalyptic writing is that not only does it show you this, but it shows you it so dramatically that your reality and what you see every day, it ceases to look the same. Okay, you see with new eyes. And soon after this, when I got home that day, I remember I sat out at the front of my house, and I was looking at the sky, and the sky was painted with these deep swirls of blue and gray, and the wind was blowing like it always does in Grand Prairie, but it seemed like it was blowing 10 times harder than that, and I felt like it was going to blow me over. Then the storm was coming up, and this was really happening, okay? So what a great day to watch this movie and think of all this stuff. Okay, and the storm was coming up, and it was blowing me, and it was blowing me over, I felt like. And I thought about all the storms in my life, you know, and what I was going to choose, if I was going to bring the light of God's love or if I was going to bring more darkness and gloom into my life. And I thought about all these moments, and it just, it was so profound. I actually called Alan in tears that day and talked to him about my own future, and Alan can testify to this as well. In all of this, simply from watching this movie, okay, an apocalyptic vision. And if you think that's bad, I recommend that you watch any movie with Justin Pio, and it'll be 1,000 times more dramatic than that. He actually perches on the top of his seat when he's watching movies. So everything's amazing with him, okay? But the point is this. You've never really seen reality until you've seen it in apocalyptic. Okay? When you've seen your ordinary moments in the light of eternity. And no one writes apocalyptic like John does. Okay, this guy's a master artist of showing us reality. And so the seemingly ordinary things of life painted in the colors of eternity. So today we look at Revelation chapter 13, and what we'll see is the first century Roman world unveiled, okay, an apocalypse of the first century world. And I believe that the text really faces us with this question. Okay, I think that there's a central question here, and it is this. What is the center of reality? What is the very heartbeat of the entire universe? Okay, so a really easy question. And the point that John's making is that our answer to this question will order both our thoughts and our actions. And it will reveal, okay, it will reveal or unveil what it is that we, in fact, worship. So, Mitch, if I can have you come up and read Revelation chapter 13. Again, this is a pretty huge chunk, so if you have a Bible, I would definitely recommend following along. I don't know how to do slides, really, so you won't have
So I apologize, because you already had to listen to me read one really long verse, and here I am again, so... You have to do it really loud, apparently. Revelation 13, the beast out of the sea. The dragon stood on the shore of the sea, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea. It had 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns on its horns, and on each head a blasphemous name. The beast I saw resembled a leopard, but had feet like those of a bear and a mouth like that of a lion. The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and great authority. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have had a fatal wound, but that fatal wound had been healed. The whole world was filled with wonder and followed the beast. People worshipped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast, and they also worshipped the beast and asked, "Who is like the beast? Who can wage war against it?" The beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies and to exercise its authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. It was given power to wage war against God's holy people and to conquer them. And it was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast. All whose name have not been written in the Lamb's book of life, the Lamb who was slain from the creation of the world. Whoever has ears, let them hear. If anyone is to go into captivity they will go. If anyone is to be killed with the sword they will be killed. This calls for patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of God's people. Then I saw a second beast coming out of the earth. It had 2 horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. It exercised all the authority of the first beast on its behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed.
And it performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to the earth in full view of the people. Because of the signs, it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast. It deceived the inhabitants of the earth. It ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast, so that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the people who have insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666.
So as you can see here, this is a really easy text, Revision Sunday. It's Mark of the Beast, 666, all these basic things. So what I want to talk about, though, is this basic thing to start here. And that is that we, too, live in a world of beastly powers. It doesn't take long looking at the news to see oppression, corruption, murder, greed, desecration, and slander. And I'm telling you here that John saw in the Roman Empire all of the four beasts of Daniel chapter 7, okay? Definitely look that up. And all of these beasts rolled into one kind of super beast, okay? Part leopard, part bear, part lion, 10 horns and 7 heads, sorry. This exceedingly monstrous beast. And he saw that the power of the beast was the very power of Satan himself, okay, that Satan stood behind these beasts. And he saw in the emperor a farce, a man acting beastly by taking divine titles upon himself, okay? If you read much about the first century, you'll see that the titles of the Roman emperor, if you just look at basically any title about Jesus from Paul, that is applied to the emperor wholesale, okay? Whatever, Lord, what?
Savior.
Savior, yeah, Kurios, Prince of Peace. There's so many titles. In fact, I read this one thing where they were saying that for most emperors, on the day of their ascension, they actually restarted the calendar, okay? Because history begins with that emperor, okay? That is the beginning of life itself. I actually read one thing where they said that the earth would have gladly died, but now it can live because of the ascension of Caesar. Okay, so these are, you just read the book of Colossians, apply that to Caesar, and you'll hear a whole bunch of what it was like in the first century. It is absolutely dramatic, the titles that they're willing to take upon themselves, okay? And for John, these titles only properly belong to the true King of Kings and Lord of Lords, okay? John was so furious at this that he numbered the emperor 666, okay, which is the merely human number three times over. Now, why would I say that 666 is the human number three times over? Okay, why would 6 be the human number? Can anyone take a crack at that? 7 is, who said that? 7 is perfection? Awesome. Okay, you're way ahead of me. Nice work, sir. Okay, but so what about 6, though? What makes it the human number? This guy's a master with numbers and everything, right? So where does 6 come up in the Bible and have to do with humanity? Anybody? What's that? The day of creation. Boom. Human beings were created on the 6th day, okay? John always keeps these things in mind, and it's where he derives the importance of the number 7 from as well, because that's the day where God enters into his creation, okay? It's the day of completion as well. So the human number three times over. And what John's saying here is that there is no hint of divinity anywhere within the emperor, okay? He is 6, he is 6 again, and he is 6 again, okay? He is completely and utterly human, and that is it, okay? And he did this to show that he falls short of what number? Yeah, 777 would be, if he was going to apply divinity to the emperor, he would have called him the 777, right? You don't want to be the 666 in Hebrew thought, okay? 777, three times over. The number of perfection. Jesus is absolutely divine and perfect every single time, okay? Three times, perfect. And so he saw people giving as well into these ways of the beastly empire. And he said that these people were somehow marked, okay? And there has been endless speculation as to whether or not we're going to get credit cards implanted in our arms and things like that, okay? But I'm telling you here, it made sense to them, okay? He saw these people, the giving into the worship of the emperor and the empire, as having marked their right hand and their forehead. Now, John is a Jew, okay? So this is of special importance to him. And there's this thing that the Jews did where they would fasten up these scrolls, okay, these tiny scrolls, and they would roll them up and they would put them in these little boxes, okay, and they would bind them to their forehead and to their hands. And in that, okay, that might seem like a silly thing, but the reason why they were doing that is absolutely fundamentally important, because in those little scrolls they would write the words of the Shema, and the Shema said this, okay, this is the basic important confession of what it means to be Israel, and it says this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your might. And the reason why they did this was for the purpose of directing the contents of their minds and directing the actions of their hands towards the one and only true God and Emperor. Okay? Yahweh himself. He is their king. Okay? Now, John saw that they were doing this, but it wasn't directed towards Yahweh. Okay, they were binding something else on their forehead and on their hand symbolically as they worshiped the beast. Okay, so John's saying these people, in order to buy and sell more, they'd organize their thoughts and their deeds around the ways of beastly empire. Okay, the beastly empire of Rome. And John lived in this world of beastly powers, and so do we. Now, there's something that Jim pointed out to me, so I'm going to say it here, and that is this. I'm not implying that the only beastly power that's ever existed is Rome. I'm just implying that for John, it was Rome. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean that that's the only beastly power that's ever existed. Okay? But he saw in Rome the ultimate beast, all four beasts of Daniel rolled into one. So with all of that said today, you can see how I'm glossing over a whole bunch of really critical information that people get all worked up over, okay? But the reason why I'm doing that is because rather than focus on all of these symbols, I want to focus on what John would say about how we are supposed to live in the midst of beastly powers. Because for years and years and years, I've heard people argue again and again, you know, 666 is Barack Obama, or China is going to rise up out of the sea and kill us, and all these things. And I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to mock that, okay? What I'm trying to say is this: whatever you identify to be the beast or the mark or whatever, the question you always, always, always have to get to in the end is yes, okay, fair enough, you can believe that. But the question then is, how do you live in the midst of whatever beast you've decided? Okay? That seems to be the much more important question then, is how do we actually live amidst the beasts? Okay? So just like the movie I mentioned, X-Men Days of Future Past, the thing is, if I would have got caught up in that movie thinking, which mutant represents me? Right? I would have missed the whole point of the movie. And the point of the movie is one of forgiveness. And what will we do when we realize that we are faced with a choice that will shape the future of the world? Okay, it's the same thing for John. What will we do with these choices? And when we're faced with such choices in the ordinary moments of every day. Okay, and John's going to blow them up into eternity for us. So what will mark our heads and our hands as we go through life? Okay, what is our mark? Again, I want to say that in the end, it all comes down to this central reality, okay, this central question, and that is, what do you believe is the heartbeat, the very center of reality? Okay, John wants to ask you this question. So let's look at this narrative a little bit more closely. What I want to suggest to you today is if you look at the chapter 13 broadly, I want to say that it's some sort of a narrative sandwich, okay? A beast sandwich. There's one beast at the beginning and one beast at the end, and then this secret ingredient in the middle that we're going to get to later, okay? And as we look at the beast, you know, something that struck me is, really, what have these beasts got going for them? Why on earth would anybody cave into worshiping an exceedingly monstrous beast? Okay, that seems like the worst disguise ever. But keep in mind that what John is doing is John is unveiling reality for us. He shows us the monstrous nature of these beasts. But what would we see were it not for his revelation? What would we see if we lived in Rome and we looked at the empire and its emperor? I want to suggest to you that there's a few things that we would see. Most of us are from, you know, middle class, upper middle class kind of neighborhoods and things. And so I want to say that for us, this is what we would have seen. We would have seen an unimaginable peace over which seemed like the entire world. Okay, they couldn't really imagine a world grander than Rome. Okay, Rome was massive. It swept across the entire earth. Okay, a peace like they had never seen before. I think what we would have seen as well is sweeping technological advances. Okay, roads, aqueducts, and beautiful grand buildings that were unmatched in size and splendor. In fact, Nero built this one temple, or not a temple, sorry, like a, just like a big building in a sense, I guess like a temple to himself. And it was so massive, it was like a football stadium. And when the next Caesar came in, he just buried it in rubble and built his on top. Okay? A perfect build. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay? This is the mindset here. That imagine just having the resources and the skill to do those things. Okay, we would have also seen an enormous military, one that patrolled the roads so that trade was possible without the constant threat of bandits. Okay, buying and selling, booming at this time. Okay, travel is possible at this time. Can you imagine how good you would have felt before you go to buy and sell and some bandit comes in and takes all your stock? Okay, you can't travel anywhere. You can't get your goods back and forth. But because of Rome, you can have enormous confidence. Okay, you can go out maybe on the street at night and not worry that someone's going to massacre you. Okay, why? Because of military presence. And I think that for a lot of the average people, they would have thought this idea of, they would have said, you know what? Rome's pretty good. I feel a lot of confidence in this nation. And they would have started thinking in their minds, you know, really, who can stand up against Rome? Who could possibly fight against this enormous power that is the Roman Empire? And then they would have thought this too, I think. You know, really, anyone who comes to threaten our way of life, I know what will happen to them. We will crush them into dust. Okay? No one's going to take down this superpower. And so power and privilege and prestige were things that you could actually have in Rome because you could build a life. Okay? You could take the time to build a life. And there was a system in place, okay? There was a whole world in place where there was peace and security and all these things. And so these kind of lives could be had. And you know what? Maybe you're like me and you're thinking, well, I mean, heck, I just want a comfortable life. You know, I just go about my business and all those kind of things. Well, that could be had in Rome too. You know, maybe you could fade into the background a little bit. You could just have your ordinary life, peace and security, you know, all these things that we want. Maybe you're thinking, you know, I don't want anything extravagant in my life. You know, that's what I want in Grand Prairie. I just want to have my house, just want to go about my business, and want everything to be all right. And you know, we're not trying to hurt anybody. And for the first time, these people, they could have that. Okay, they could sit back and relax and maybe have a chance to build a safe life. Then the question is really, is that too much to ask? What's so evil about that? You know, I just want to build a life for myself. I just want some peace and security for once. That's all I want. You know, and I think that today. That's what I want. I just want four walls, and the people that I love, I just want to be inside of those walls. That's what I want to build in my life. I want to build a family. I want to have these things. But what if someone was to come into that world? Okay? What if they were to come in and threaten that way of life? Just think about that for a moment. Okay? This life you've built within your four walls. What if someone was to come and threaten that? What if they were to come to threaten those people that you love within those four walls? Okay, seriously, think about this with me for a minute. If someone comes to threaten the people you love within your four walls, what would you do? This is the time for answering that question, okay? So seriously, just throw it out there. Oh, I don't need a Christian response. I want your gut response. Okay, what would you do? What's that? Fight them? Trevor Davis said that he would politely ask them to leave. And I knew he was telling the truth, so... Mitch would fight them, okay. So what else? Anybody else? Run away? You'd vacate your premises, you know? Like, fine, it's yours. Okay, there we go. Anybody else?
Reinforce the windows and doors so they can't.
Fortify. There we go. Okay. That's why you closed the blinds last time I came over, hey? That makes sense. Yeah. Does anybody have something rise inside of them, rise up like an anger within when you think about someone hurting your family? Yeah, I mean, I have a little bit of that. I think I would pummel them into oblivion, okay? Alan would probably give some gracious response or something like that. But you know, for many of us, you think you would smash them to pieces, right? Something powerful would rise up within. And if you take enough time to think about that, like maybe you watch a movie where people are harming kids and you have kids and then you think, oh, I want to crush these people. You know, something rises up within. Again, watch one of those with Justin Pio and it'll be crazy. Okay? So imagine that now. But imagine that the threat wasn't violence, okay, or no intent to harm you whatsoever. But what if someone came along and all that they wanted was they just needed some of what you had? Okay, what if that person, okay, they come to your four walls and the people that you love, and it's your last meal, okay? Most of us can't imagine this, but imagine that we were destitute, that we were poor, this is our last meal, and someone comes to our house, to those within our four walls and says, listen, can I just share some of that with you? But you know that to give some of that out, it's going to cost you, okay? Someone's going to go hungry here. Who's it going to be? Okay, what will you do then? Now, these are important questions, okay? But what I want to ask you is this. Would it change if the person that asked you was God? Okay? What if it was your last meal? You're not sure of the future. You're not sure if you're going to have more food in the future. And you need to share. And the person that asks is God himself. But does that change anything? And what I want to say is this. At the beginning, again, I asked the question, which is, what is the very center of reality? What is the heartbeat of the entire universe? Because as I said, our answer to that question will order our thoughts and our actions and reveal what it is that we truly worship. And I'm going to tell you the truth. As I read and thought about these things, I realized that in so many ways, I follow the beast. Because the truth is, the beast will never ask me to do without. He would say, you know what? You deserve enough. And the beast, he'll never ask me to go hungry. He says, hey, just protect those within your four walls. And one thing I know for certain that the beast will never ask is he'll never ask me to suffer. He says, you know what? You should never feel any pain. And there's one thing I can guarantee you. You will never, ever hear from the beast. And that is that he would ask you to die. And as I thought about these things, I heard another voice say this. Tell me if you recognize this voice. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. And again, I heard this. If any of you wants to be my follower, you must turn from your selfish ways, take up your cross daily, and follow me. And I heard this as well. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake, he is the one who will save it. And then I looked in chapter 13, and it says this. If anyone is to be taken captive, into captivity they will go. If anyone is to be killed with the sword they will be killed. This is a summons for God's holy people to be patient and have faith. You see, the truth is this, the call of God is much, much less appealing than the call of the beast in so many ways. And John says that because of this, everyone who lived on earth worshiped the beast. Every single one. Except those whose name had been written in the book of life belonging to the Lamb that had been slain from the foundation of the world. I think that there's only one way to escape the seduction of the beast, and it's this. It is to know the furious love of the Lamb. That is the very center of reality, and it's the center of this narrative sandwich. Because the truth is, folks, we don't follow the beast. We do not live to secure our lives. We do not live to merely take care of our own. Because the truth is, God's love doesn't have four walls. He always, 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 always goes out to seek and save that which is lost. And he always has. And he will do this, and he has always done this, even at the cost of his own life. And now I want you to listen to me for a second here, okay? Because this is something that I am incredibly passionate about. And so I am going to make this point. And that is this. I hear people say things about love, that love is wimpy. Okay? And that all this talk of love, you know, it's for liberal whiners and sissies who don't have the guts to fight. And they say things like this. So what, are we just supposed to wait around to die? And there's this rhetoric that goes about. But what I want to say to you is this. This is the furthest thing from the truth. You see, the truth is, this is not passive love. It is the furious love of the Lamb. The Lamb aggressively loves unto death. He does not back down. He does not give up. He always believes. He always hopes. And his love never, ever, ever fails. This is the blueprint of reality. This is the fabric of creation. And it is the foundation in which this world is built upon. All reality is made by the Lamb and for the Lamb. The Lamb is the center of reality. The Lamb's power is the power that holds everything in existence together. The Lamb's blood is the blood that pumps at the heart of existence. And no other power can prevail, and no other beast can stand. You see, the beast says this. He says, worship me. I have all power. I can secure your life. Just protect your own. It's fine. But I believe that the Lamb says this. The Lamb says, worship me. Because from the moment I saw you, from the dawn of creation, from the foundation of the world, I knew I could never give you up. I was always willing to die for you. I gladly gave my life for you because you captured my heart. Yes, you in particular, with all of your faults and all of your failures, because I know every part of you, even the parts that you hide. And you are my child. I live for you. I died for you. I went through hell to find you, and I reign for you. And nothing can separate you from my love. And I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. But there's a hard truth. And the truth is that there is an entire world out there that doesn't know me. And I love them just as much. Because my love has no walls. You see, the beast lies. He says the world and your world can be secured by force. But I know the truth. The world is secure through self-sacrificing love. This is the very center of reality. And so too, it is the center of the book of Revelation. It is the calling to give our lives in word and deed for the sake of the world. This is the choice that Revelation calls us to make. This is the choice we have to face every day amidst the beasts, whoever they are, wherever they are, and however many come. Why? Because we pattern ourselves after the Lamb. The Lamb who founded this very world on His own self-giving, self-sacrificing love. I want to tell you today that there is no other foundation. There is no other God. This is the only God that there is. A God who would not spare His one and only Son. And I want to ask you what it would look like for you, or what it does look like for you, to order your thoughts and the actions of your hands around this central truth. Or in John's own language, what marks your forehead and what marks your hands? What Lord do you worship? Because today's Vision Sunday, and it's my vision that we would be a people that are known for the furious love of the Lamb. This is no passive love. And in case that seems way too lofty for you, I thought about some simple ways we could do this. Now, one of the most important things to remember here is that apocalyptic, it paints the ordinary moments of life in the colors of eternity. Okay, so this might sound so gigantic with you, where you're thinking, well, when's the next time I'm in a war, you know? Swords are going to be flying at me and all this? John's saying this is the everyday bits of your life. Okay, this isn't sometime somewhere else. These are the ordinary choices that you make in your life. Okay, he's blown it up into eternity for us. And these are some simple things I thought about. Now, what I don't want you to hear is that these are the only things you ever do, and you know, we don't see the things you do at work or anything like that, okay? It is so important, everything, and there's so many awesome things that people do, okay? But I just want to bring this down to some few things we can do here at the church. Number one is this: you could become a greeter. There is no more important job at the church than a greeter, okay? So if you want all the glory, become a greeter, okay? And I'm not even joking when I say that, because every stat we see, everything we know, is that in the first 5 minutes, people make their choice on their church. Okay, why would that be? Well, I'll tell you, because the core reality of life is self-giving love. Okay, so when people come into the church and nobody says hi to them, or they've come from Ontario, they don't know a single person, they left all their family behind, maybe they're trying to make a new future and stuff like that, and they have nobody, and they just want one friend. And we could be those people for them. We can be the people that latch on to them and say, there's a love that goes out for you, and it's gone out from the very foundation of the world. The next thing you could do is this. You could take a young adult out for dinner once a month, or twice a month, or as many times as you want. Okay? Because the truth is, there's so many people with broken families. And they just want some stable people in their life. They want to hang out with somebody and have somebody that pours into them. Okay? You can make a difference by doing that ordinary thing if you see it in light of eternity. And the other thing you could do is you could look on Kijiji. This is a risky one. You'd have to have guts to do this. You can look on Kijiji in the community section, and you can find a person, because there's thousands on there, that are saying, I moved to Grand Prairie and I'd just like to find one friend because I can't find any. And some of you know what it's like to have a hard time making friends, and so your heart goes out to those people. And you could look on Kijiji and you could find that person. You could say, you know what, I'll be your friend. And why would I do this? Because God does it for me. And you could find them and you could love them. And I'll tell you what, you love somebody like that, they'd have a hard time not coming to church with you. I actually saw on Kijiji, the swing dance crew, they're a Christian group, they put up a posting about, hey, if you're looking for a friend, you know, we could maybe be your friend. And after, I saw it when it was 5 days in, and guess how many hits it had? It had 5,000 hits. Okay? In 5 days, 5,000 people went on Kijiji to look at how they could find one friend. And I think we could maybe be those people. The other thing you could do is you could join youth group, and you could become a youth leader. Because there has probably never been a time in the history of the world where families are so broken, and young people just want a hero to look up to, and somebody that would take care of them and love them. Okay? And sometimes it's not the easiest thing in the world when you're a teenager to talk to your parents, you know, but you want some other trusted advisor to maybe talk to. And we could be those people. And you can make such a difference. These aren't ordinary things. The other thing you could do is you could help out with Saturday Night Supper. If you don't know what that is, you can come and talk to me. But it's a meal that's put on for the homeless. And you could love the poor and the homeless. And I know they put out something in the bulletin before at requesting volunteers because they're desperate for volunteers. Does our love go out? Or you could write a note to your sponsor child. As Alan said, something that they will hold on to. It'll be the most treasured thing because they never forget that stuff. They never forget it. And it would take you a moment. Okay, and you can challenge me on that too because I'm terrible at it. The other thing you could do is you could talk to Bob and Mavis because they're leaving and they're going to Calgary. And sometimes when you give and give and give and give and give your life away and then you feel shriveled up at the end, but then nobody comes and tells you the difference that it made. And you wonder if you were worth anything in your life. And you could bless them dramatically by telling them just some difference that it made. I guarantee you they'll never forget it. And you could tell Jim and Gail or anybody else you've ever known that's worked here that might be desperate to just hear some difference that they made. Okay? Even Paul says that, right? When he found out that people were doing it, he says, I can live again. It's not a small thing. If we would just take a moment. I want to tell you that there's a million ways you could take a moment of your time and sacrifice it, and you would make an enormous difference. And we mustn't give up. Because these are not ordinary moments when seen in the light of eternity. Because each and every day, in every moment, we wage war on the beast through the ways that we love. Revelation 12, verse 11, it is the very center of the center of the center of the book of Revelation. Okay? And this is what it says. Alan already mentioned to us that it's the center, but this is what it says. It says, and they triumphed over him who is Satan by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. Because they did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. Amen. I would just like to pray. God, I thank you that you have loved us from all eternity. And that long before we ever sinned or ever made a mistake, you were willing to die for us. Because we didn't change the shape of who you are. We didn't change the character of who you are by our sin. You were always the God of self-giving love. I thank you that there is no God like you. There is no other power that will be victorious. But but your love reigns supreme. God, I pray that we would learn to align ourselves with the Lamb, that we would use Lamb power in this world, that we would give and give and love again, even at cost to ourselves. But God, so often when we hear that message, we just wear ourselves out. God, I pray that you would allow us to be strong brothers and sisters for one another, that we would keep pouring the love back in, that we would speak courage into one another's hearts, that we would lift one another up in prayer and in word and in deed, that we could be a strong force of love in this world, that we would wage war against the beast in the everyday moments of our lives. And God, I pray that we would see the day when on Kijiji we won't find thousands upon thousands of people that are looking for just one friend, but that they would find it here. In your name, amen.